As we wrap up 2025, one thing's clear. Uncertainty isn't temporary. It's the world we live in now. Noble Gold Investments helps Americans protect what they've built with real gold and silver, holding value when everything else feels uncertain. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and take your first step toward a safe future. This holiday season, when you open up a qualified account, you'll receive 10 one-ounce commemorative silver holiday coins. Visit Noble Gold today.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is Pucks in 7 with Ryan Payton and Victoria Matiash.
And we are brought to you by Sprott Money. Ryan Payton, Victoria Matiash. We continue on Pucks in 7. So thrilled to be joined by Devils color analyst on MSG Plus, NHL Network, three-time Stanley Cup champion. Had his number retired in 2006, and he's known as Mr. Devil, Ken Danico, joining us here on the show. How you doing, Ken?
I'm doing good. How are you guys? Pleasure to be on with you. I'm still recuperating from a Western Canadian road trip.
Right.
As you get older, I don't know how the players do it. They've had a jam-packed schedule. The Devils have, certainly, to start the season. So I'm still getting acclimated in the time zone and everything. But I'm good. I'm good.
Good. Travel is not fun. I'm sure it wasn't enjoyable for you back when you played. I know for the guys, too, especially now they go overseas, etc. Lots to get into. We'll talk Devils. We'll talk a ton of different storylines, too, in the NHL. I want to begin, though, with your name. Not Ken Danico, but Mr. Devil. A lot of people, I'm sure, would not be like to be known as Mr. Devil. So how does that make you feel?
Context. Context is key. Yes.
I know.
I like to think I'm not that guy, Mr. Devil. But I'm certainly, I'm very proud of it. The fans near the end of my career had named me Mr. Devil, I guess, for my longevity, being here so long in the state of New Jersey and with the Devils organization. Now I've become accustomed to it. That's every game I'm out there, and I'm known not as Ken, I'm known as Mr. Devil. So it's kind of cool. But I was very proud to be part of the team for as long as I was, and nobody expects to play in one organization. And now I've been with the Devils for 41 years.
It's incredible.
Organization as a player, 20 years, and 21 years in the organization as an ambassador and broadcaster, as a lot of people know. And it means a lot to me. I mean, they have been very loyal to me. I was loyal to the organization. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, we won. And that's what it was always what it
three,
was about.
Three times.
To be
part of a team that had some success, guys. And I'll also say, I mean, we were really bad when I started in the 80s. Yeah. And I was one of those guys that always would tell the media as a young kid, I wore my emotion on my sleeve, as mm-hmm. they say. Mm-hmm. I kept telling them, we're going to become something someday. I wanted to be part of the solution. I never wanted to get traded, go anywhere. This was the team that gave me my opportunity to fulfill a dream. I didn't know where New Jersey was when I was drafted back in 82, and that's a true story. Mm. I had to pick up the phone. I'll go back a little bit. My late mother, who I adored, a little petite lady of 5'1".
Really?
We back when the draft in 82, obviously no internet and all those kinds of things. And that's when players really didn't go to the draft. And
right.
I've told this story many times, but it's still heartwarming to me and gives me goosebumps once in a while, because she woke me up very early. I grew up in Edmonton, and the draft was in Montreal, 2-hour time difference. And she woke me up about 40 minutes in and said, Kenny, you have to take this call. I took a peek at the alarm clock. I was still groggy. And I go, Mom, it's a friend playing a joke on me. It's way too early.
Yeah.
And then when she called me, Kenneth, come down and take it. knew she meant business. So I go down barely awake and I go, hello. They go, Ken, how are you? Congratulations. We have just drafted you 18th overall. That's when there was 21 teams. I was not ranked to go in the first round. And that's why I wasn't in the draft. Agents didn't fly you to the draft if you weren't going in the right. first round. Right. They were saving as much money as they could. It was a little bit a different scenario back then. I dropped the phone, started tears in my eyes. I go to my mother, I look at her and I go, you're not going to believe this. I just went in the first round, 18th overall. And my mother, who never swears, she goes, you've got to be bleeping me.
Sure.
She goes, well, ask who it is.
Of course she did.
A true story. Did not ask. I didn't care. It didn't matter if right. it was Siberia, if it was the National yeah. Hockey League, I was going to get my opportunity. So I pick up the phone. I go, oh, yeah. By the way, who is this? And they go, it's New Jersey. No team name yet. They were uh-huh. still deciding.
That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was the original year. They moved from Colorado. And I covered the phone again and looked at my mother and said, where's New Jersey? I had no idea. I knew it was down there, a big city, New York, whatever it may be. So that was the start of my journey.
What a great story.
I was so thrilled. Mm. To go on, I would have ran the 2,000 miles, and I mean right. that, just to get my chance. And
probably backwards, too.
Backwards yeah. too. No question about it. It was yeah. just a thrill, and I knew that was the start of maybe getting an opportunity, again, like I said, to fulfill a dream. I knew they weren't very good coming from Colorado, and to me, that meant, well, maybe I'll get a better opportunity. Like everybody said, do you want to get drafted by the Oilers? Because sure. I'm from Edmonton, and I followed them, and I grew up with Mark Messier and Kevin Lowe, yep. who I just saw recently out west. And Messier was a big mentor of mine. I've known him since, oh gosh, 12 years old, and was watching them that dynasty years of winning Stanley Cups and just being around those guys. I didn't want to go to Edmonton because I knew how good they were, and that was the truth. I didn't want to be home. I said I wanted a new venture. And I thought maybe it'd be impossible to make that team one day because they were so damn so good.
Right.
And that was really my thought process. But those guys, I mean, Coffey, Gretzky, got to know them all and just be around them and watch how they carry themselves, watch how professional they are and the mindset of a winner. And I always say that was so important for me at the start of my career, even though I was going, like I said, to a bad team. Just what it was going to take, mm-hmm. the work ethic, the preparation, just to become a National Hockey Leaguer, and then eventually try to be part of something and try to be part
of
it. And those guys meant a lot to me. I just recently saw Kevin Lowe, who I haven't seen forever, when I was in Edmonton. We happened to run into each other on the street. He lives above or has a place above the hotel we were at. Mm. It was so great to catch up because he was a guy, he worked incredibly hard in the summer, and I used to travel on vacations with those guys and have fun and do some crazy stuff back then like we all did. But Kevin Lowe would have me up first thing in the morning. We went to Greece together, we went to Germany, we went all over with Messier and everybody, and he'd have me up swimming in the ocean a mile and a half. And if anybody knows me, I had a pretty dense body. I was pretty thick, and I used to so it was the best workout in the world.
Yeah.
He was going to make sure that I stayed even with all the extracurricular activities sure. and the party we were going to do in the summer. Mm-hmm. Kevin Lowe had me up early in the morning working out like crazy.
That's the first I've ever heard of Kevin Lowe being a bit of a taskmaster. That's a good story. I like
really,
that one.
He really was. Oh, yeah. He trained extremely hard in the off season.
Huh.
So I go, Kev, I'm tired. Let's go. Let's get up. If we're gonna play in the day at night, we've got to burn the candle at both ends.
Yeah, have to. Yeah.
So that's kind of the start of my journey again to the National Hockey League.
Well, I mean, you talk about how you joined a Devils team that wasn't very good to start, but eventually became very, very good, and you won 3 Stanley Cups. Does one of them carry a little bit more meaning than the other two, or is there one that's a bit different?
That's a great question, Victoria, and I get asked that quite often. And I'll preface it this way. I mean, look, the second dream for every kid growing mm-hmm. up and certainly in Canada. And there was ten Ken Danicos, I like to say, on every corner at Edmonton. So to really make the National Hockey League, it was a small percentage. And my mother always used to pacify me as a kid when I kept telling her 10 times a day from 7 years old on, I'm going to play in the National Hockey League. And that was a true story. And she used to go to my dad and go, you know, is he being realistic here? You know, she'd always go, yeah, yeah, Kenny, I know. That's what she would say. Yeah, yeah, Kenny, I know.
Sure.
But then when I got to New Jersey, your second dream is to win a Stanley Cup.
Of course.
How are we going to win a Stanley Cup when they were winning 17 games a year in Colorado, maybe? And my first few years in New Jersey, winning 17 games a year. To finally fulfill that dream in 95, I'd already been in the league, oh gosh, 10, 11 years. It just made it that much more gratifying to start something from the bottom and build the way up, and not only to become a regular in the National Hockey League, but, you know, to try to come together as a team, and just you learn so much more as you go along. And when you reflect 10, 15 years after your career's over, understanding what it took to win and the group of guys, a great group of guys that I played with, you have a bond forever. And I always say, everybody thinks the first one was, you know, the one I remember most or most important. And everyone was a little different. The first one was a whirlwind. It was a dream come true.
I bet.
Party for a long time, obviously.
No.
I maybe didn't soak it in as much at the time. Don't get me wrong. And I was a guy that I didn't go home with the cup. I made Jersey my home from day one. I played my first game as a 19-year-old kid in Madison Square Garden. So what a thrill that was. My mother came, hated to travel, didn't like big cities, knew nothing about New York as well. And she came to the game and she goes, I don't care if he plays another game ever. Damn, if he didn't tell me 100 times that he's going to play in the National Hockey League. And we got spanked, of course, the first game.
Right.
But it didn't matter. I played my game to go on to play as long as I did in as many games, and then win that cup in 95. Meant a lot. That group was unbelievable. But the second one in 2000 was probably our best team, our deepest team. I mean, we were damn good. A lot of people don't know. Everybody talks about our defensive style and Trap and Marty Brodeur, who didn't hurt to play in front of arguably the greatest goaltender of all time. We were second in the National Hockey League in goals for. Nobody brings that up in the regular season. And we just happened to be great defensively, too, because we just did it all. And that team was special. And I maybe absorbed it a little bit more. I really took in what it took to be a winner with a great group of guys and the great Scott Stevens and Nita Myers.
Yeah.
You know, Patrick Elias. I mean, I could go on down the list. But what I realized is the role guys, you can't win without them. The Randy McKays. The Jay Pandolfos, the John Maddens. I mean, these games. I guess I'd put myself in that category that you have to make beautiful music and be an orchestra. It's as Lou Lamoriello used to tell me, and everybody has to play their instrument to a T. And I really understood what it was about. And then the third one, well, that was just as special because my role's diminishing. Mm-hmm. I'm getting older. I was 39 years old, been in the league 20 years pretty well. And I'm in and out of the lineup during the playoffs. And, you know, another great story if you guys have time. I mean,
absolutely.
I've told this one too. But all these, I love talking about it because it brings back such fond memories. And,
of course.
And gives me goosebumps. Many people know I didn't always get along with the late, great Pat Burns. We butted heads quite often. Great coach, great man. We had the same personality, a lot of fire. So there was a lot of battles because at that stage of my career, I knew I may be in and out of line. Lou had taken me aside. I had that kind of relationship with him and said, Kenny, you understand, you know, and that's what I understood. It takes 28, 30 guys to win a Stanley Cup. It's not just the first 20 guys that are in the lineup, 18 skaters and two goalies of game one of the playoffs. To go for it, grueling rounds, you need contributions from 28, 20 guys. And I saw that in 95. I saw that in 2000 when I was in every night. And I was always that guy making sure the black aces were ready because they had to come in and do a job. And every organization had it and you had to have that. So I kind of became that as it came full circle in my career. And, you know, but I'm still a competitor. I'm angry,
of course.
Disappointed, but I would never let it interfere with the goal. And that was to win. So me and Pat, you know, would butt heads. I hadn't missed the Devils playoff game in history. We're playing the Boston Bruins, I believe, in the second round. It's coming. You know, I know it's coming. Eventually, I'm going to be, you know, out of the lineup for a younger defenseman. We had Oleg Trevodosky, who was in and out of the lineup. Mm-hmm. Schmelik. And you know, we're up 3-0 against the Bruins. We win 3-0 in game three, I believe. And Pat takes me aside the next morning and say, you know, we're going to get Trevodosky in there. But he didn't say it as kindly as I would have liked.
Right.
and I will tell you, I laugh about it now because it was almost a battle. I mean, Lou had to interfere. I mean, here's two guys, and I'm not kidding you.
Really?
Almost got to fists. I mean, we're in the Boston, in Boston. I don't know what the name of the arena was at the time.
Yeah.
You know, Pat's such a fiery guy, as yeah. I am.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget our producer, who's our producer today, Roland Dratch. And I haven't told this story too much, but he's around. He ducked around the TV truck. He's going, holy moly, these guys are going to go at it. And that was just the passion and the competitiveness
right.
Of us, you know, because I'm going, we're up 3-0. Are we going to really break this streak now? Not that it meant everything, but I played 160-something yeah. games straight in the playoffs. The media kind of was on my side a lot. And Pat got feisty with the media. And I you know, eventually got broken up. Lou came in between, and Lou goes, and that's Lou Lamoriello, our great general manager at
yes.
the time. Takes me aside and he goes, Kenny, you know what this is about. It's his decision. I go, Lou, I understand. But I said, can you ask him to just say, lighten up with the press and just say, you know, I think he said I didn't play very well in game three. We won 3-0. How bad could have I have played, you know? So, but he was just being fiery. And that's
right.
And I ended up loving Pat. He was fiery and just a little sensitive with the media at the time. I said, Lou, I understand if I have to sit out. It's okay. And I will be the biggest first guy to give Trevodosky a hug and a cheerleader. And I did. And that's what he loved about me, I humbly say. Lou had said, I'd heard you take Trevodosky around the corner. I didn't know he was around. Lou, seemed like there were six of them because he was everywhere.
Right.
After this,
there still is.
I grabbed Trevodosky because he was a little intimidated. Saw me a little grumpy. I said, Trev, this ain't against you.
Yeah.
We need you, man. Be your part of this. Go in there and play your best. And I really developed a bond with him. And Lou told me after my career, years after, he said, you know, I heard that conversation you had with Trevodosky. You put your ego aside. Mm-hmm. And you said, let's go. I said, so if you see me angry, grumpy, miserable, Trev, please, it's not against you. We need you, man. And he loved it. And we had a great bond. So that was the first game I sat. And then we play Ottawa, the best team in the league.
Mm-hmm.
They'd won the President's Trophy. They were stacked. And that wasn't our best team in 2003. We just knew how to win and find ways because we'd been there, done that, and understood the playoffs. We go up 3-1. They come back, make it 3-3. I played game 6 and 7 against the Senators. And a couple others in that series, sat one or two, I think. So now the Stanley Cup Finals, I think I'm starting for sure.
Right.
Play game 6 and 7 against the Ottawa Senators. Sure enough, that comes to me. I'm not starting game one. I'm bitter, but there was no argument, nothing. I just say, this guy, I don't understand. You know? And then again, I told Trev, go get him, man. We need you, blah, blah, blah. And so the series is going along. We win the first two handily at home. I know I'm not going to get in three, but I'm staying ready.
Mm-hmm.
We lose the next two in Anaheim. It was a homer series. It's 2-2. I think maybe I'm going to get in game five first spark and do my little part and whatever. May I don't get in. I don't get into game five and we win. So we're up 3-2 and we go back to Anaheim. We lose game six. I know I'm not getting in game six, but I've resided to the fact, you know, I've had a great career. I've been part of this even in 2003. Let's just win, man. We got to win. I mean, mm-hmm. we can't lose this opportunity. And And we fly back from Anaheim. It's a Wednesday. We play in Anaheim. It's a short turnaround, play Friday. We fly back the next day, so we're rested and get in at 6 o'clock. We're going to stay at a hotel in New Jersey. I get off the bus. I'm in a good mood. I'm nervous about game seven, about the team and everything. Absolutely not expecting to be in. Pat Burns takes me off the bus, says, Kenny, I want to talk to you outside. He goes, you're in tomorrow night. Don't tell anybody. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Now I think he's making the wrong decision.
That's honesty, Ken. That's honesty.
You don't want to play me.
I haven't played in 2 weeks now.
Right.
I'm going, this guy's certifiably insane. And I go, and he walks away from me. That was it. Those are the only words spoken. I walk in, before I walked in, I call my family. I call a best friend. Mm-hmm. My best friend, like, these guys had a way better pulse than me. I go, you're not going to bleep and believe this. He goes, you're in tomorrow night, aren't you? I go, how the hell would you know? Because now I told him, I said, he's making the wrong decision. Yeah. I mean, now I just want to win. Now I feel like a rookie. I'm nervous. I don't want to be that guy that coughs up the puck.
Makes
that mistake.
Stanley Cup, whatever it may be. He says, Kenny, you've played 1,283. And this is my friend calming me down going, you've played 1,283 games in the National Hockey League regular season. About 170 plus more in the playoffs. It's close to 1,500 games. I think you'll be just fine.
Yeah. Mm.
And he
wise words.
Put things in perspective for me. But I'll never forget it. And then we go on to win the game 3-0. I go into Pat Burns' office the next morning. I hand him a cigar. He likes cigars. I used to like a celebratory cigar and haven't stopped since. It's kind of my vice now. Mm. I go, Pat, I know we didn't always see eye to eye. Nothing matters now. Thank you so much. I'm forever indebted to you because this is it for me. I can't go out any better than this. I'm going out on top. I'm retiring. And you made it real special for me to go out. I get emotional about it because
you're choking me up. I've heard this story before, actually. Yeah. You're choking me up a little bit.
And he looked me in the eye and says, Kenny, I didn't really handle it all that well either. You know I'm a fiery guy. I said, Pat, it doesn't matter. I know we're the same. We wanted to win. You have tough decisions to make. I said, but I couldn't believe you put me back in. And how many athletes get to go end their career and retire on top?
Yeah.
It just
storybook ending, Ken.
Storybook ending, and made me feel, you know, just at ease about packing it in and feel like nothing left to do anymore. So it was a very special moment. But man, we used to butt heads. It was just part of it, part of the journey. And now I love the man, and God bless him, and God rest his soul. Just because he said, he talked to Scott Stevens on the plane, and he sat beside him. I guess I didn't see it. And he said, I'm thinking of putting Kenny back in. We need the emotion for game seven, the little intangibles. The fans are going to be pumped up because the rapport I had with the fans. I'll never forget. I'm sitting in the dressing room. We had a small little dressing room at Continental Airlines Arena. And when they didn't hear me as a healthy scratch, I heard the roar. And that made me more nervous.
Oh.
I touched the puck for the first time when I got my first shift. Yeah. And the fans are roaring, giving me an ovation. And I wanted to stop time and go, guys, please be quiet. You're making me more nervous. But I had such a deep appreciation and relationship with the fans for so long. And Scotty told Pat, he says, it's a no-brainer, Pat. He's a leader. He's a guy that'll bring a ton of emotion. And however many minutes you play him, his little intangible will help us from a emotional standpoint. So the rest is history. Sorry if I dragged that on, but
no,
I love that story.
It's therapy for me. But forever indebted and grateful to Pat Burns. I saw his wife at the 20th anniversary. We had a 20th anniversary in 2020. Three of that cup, and she You know, she says, you don't know how difficult that decision was. I said, it's over with. I love you guys. Thank you. So she was so sweet about it. Great stuff,
though. That's a great way to bookend it, Ken. It really is. We'll transition to the Devils now. We can go on and on about the history. But I wanted to, when you were talking about winning the Cup and how much sacrifice it takes from everybody, I remember when Wayne Gretzky in Edmonton, they lost to the Islanders in 83. And the story that he's told is he's walking by the Islanders' dressing room and they're exhausted. They're not celebrating. They're just – and he thought, hold on a second. This team should be on cloud nine. But then he realized, okay, this takes a lot of work. So my question to you is, before you won the Cup, was there a time, a season, an off season, a moment where you realized, you know what, we have something really special with this team and we can actually win the Cup? Because as you said, you started off pretty poorly.
Yeah, and Ryan, I remember that. I was going to the games in Edmonton.
Okay, yep.
I was with the Oilers. And,
of course.
And remember, I love that story from Greg. I mean, such a great guy. What an ambassador for our game. Got to know him well and love chatting hockey with him because he's such a humble guy.
Oh.
When I'm around Wayne Gretzky, he'll call me once in a while out of the blue just to chat hockey. And like, I'll come home and talk to my wife and tell my wife, guess who just called me?
Yeah.
Wayne Gretzky. I'm like a little kid still the day when I get to talk to Wayne Gretzky every once in a while. It's just, it's special. So, yeah, when did we realize? I guess it all started in 88 when we made the playoffs for the first time in my career. We'd been around 6 years, never made the playoffs. And that was the start of the Lou Lamoriello era. We went 6-0-1 down the stretch just to get in. By a point, went right to the playoffs. I don't even think we went right from Chicago where we won our last game, went to Washington, or that was our second. I went to back home, we played the Islanders, who were the first seed, beat them, beat the Capitals, Eastern Conference Finals. We're playing the Bruins to go to the Stanley Cup in the Eastern Conference Finals, lost in seven. So I knew we were turning a corner.
Yeah.
I knew we had a great group of young core guys. Obviously, Lou made some deals along the way before. I thought it was to get his team to his liking, and you got to trade some good players along the way. Mm-hmm. The Mullers, the Verbeeks, guys that we traded.
Right.
Who went on to have fabulous careers. But I thought, now we're ready. Right after 88, little did I know, it takes a lot more. I mean, good teams. And it took another 7 years to get to where we got. And it took 94. That epic series, maybe one of the best playoff series ever played. A lot of people have said, if you watch that 94 series against the Rangers, who eventually became Stanley Cups, and I got to play against my dear friend who was in my wedding party that a few years prior and mentor of mine. And we didn't talk for 2 years, and that was Mark Messier, one of the greats of all time and best leaders ever. And you know, that wasn't always easy because we didn't talk for 2 years because everything was off the table once he became a Ranger because the rivalry was too big, too much tension. With Edmonton, he used to send me notes, him and Kevin from the dressing room, give it to the trainer or the stick boy and send me notes, funny little goofy notes before the game. We'd wink and warm up. That was all gone when he became a New York Ranger. But that epic series really was the turning point, and even though we lost and it was devastating and it was just a classic, it was nasty. It was what rivalries were all about. There was Hall of Famers on both sides when it was all said and done. There was an incredible goaltending. Richter was still so underrated. And I say with due respect, guy should be in the Hall of Fame. He was just remarkable in that series, or wouldn't even have gone seven. Losing that and understanding what it took, you always say you got to lose before you win. And then the following year, it was a shortened season, everything. And we didn't particularly have a great year. And we were second of the Rangers the year before in the regular season. They won the President's Trophy. We were the cream of the crop. So people kind of forgot about us. And all we were waiting for was the playoffs. They said, just get in, boys. Don't matter what. We were ready to turn the switch on. We had that vibe. We knew we could win it all when people all of a sudden, because we were fifth seed, I believe, you know, kind of forgot. We were one of the best teams in the National Hockey League last year. We pretty well got the same team. We were ready. We were able to turn that switch on. We're going at Stanley Cup or bust. and we steamrolled that year, 16-4 in the playoffs, and beat the mighty Red Wings in a sweep, and nobody even gave us a chance.
Yep.
They were a juggernaut that year, no question about it, with all their great players. But we just knew it. We knew 95. The year after we lost the Rangers, I knew it. Our guys, it didn't even have to be said. It was
right.
We are ready.
The feeling.
That feeling and just what it takes. And we learned that kind of from 94, you know, and hearing Gretz's story about walking by the Islanders with ice mm-hmm. packs on and not a lot of cheering. Well, yeah, it's kind of a similar situation with us, just how devastating it was to lose in 94. We were not going to lose in 95. There was right. just no way. We were quietly confident throughout the playoffs, and we were quietly confident going into the finals when all we're reading is the press clippings. We got no shot against Detroit, and we're kind of going, really?
Mm.
I actually think we're a little bit deeper than them. We believed it in our dressing room, no question about it.
All right. Let's fast forward now 21 years and a bit.
Yes.
You're obviously intimate with the Devils, Mr. Devil yourself, himself is joining us, Cam Denico. You know this team probably better than anybody. Changes in the offseason. You have a new netminder, Markstrom. You made some additions on defense. I really love the Pesci move, by the way. Brendan Dillon coming in as well. You've got Dougie Hamilton is healthy again. That's almost like adding a player.
Yeah, right.
Everybody up front is in better shape than they have been, dealing with injuries forever, really. How does this team, as it is currently constructed, look to you right now, and how far can they go?
Well, Victoria, in one short term, much better. Certainly much better than I've seen in the past. I mean, I think Tom Fitzgerald, I love the makeup of the team. Now, does that mean are they a work in progress right now? Absolutely. And that's to be expected with a new coach, a new, different personnel on the ice, certainly. But the old saying, the more things change, the more they stay the same. As mm-hmm. far as I talked about earlier, you need role guys. You need some grit. You need competitiveness. That doesn't change from my era. And I've gone with the times. I love the skill and finesse and speed of the game today and what these young players can do. So many of us couldn't in our era,
mm-hmm.
you know, different mentality and obviously a little more physical, a lot more fighting, whatever it may be. But, you know, I still like that aspect of the game, but I don't need to see fights every night. If it happens once in a while, yeah, mm-hmm. sure, fun. But what you do need is compete. And that's right. something, and you need big bodies. And you need guys. A lot of times, how are games won? Those 50-50 puck battles. And the year they had last year, yeah, injuries and the goaltending wasn't good. No excuse. But they just didn't have much of that.
Yeah.
I mean, they had a lot of skill with their core group, the Hugheses, the Bratz, and they added Timo Meier, who had some of that grit and size. But on the back end, it just was very thin. And you're just not going to win in the National Hockey League in today's game with the competitive balance throughout this league. I look at the league now, guys, and there's a few elites still, and I put Florida there, and I mm-hmm. still believe mm-hmm. in Vegas up there, and the Rangers are right there a lot because they're goaltender, but they have a lot of talent. But there's only a few. You can count them on one hand. Then the second tier, and I kind of put the Devils there right now where
okay.
there's 15 of them, 15 teams
because
it's so close. And that's why you're seeing so many 500 records or a game over 500 right now as we're entering, 13 to 15 games into the season.
Mm-hmm.
But the pieces, Tom Fitzgerald, I give him a lot of credit in the offseason. I talk to him a lot. He knows how passionate I am, and I'll give my 2 cents when I have to every
right.
once in a while. But, you know, he really understood. He says, enough. We're not going to get pushed around anymore as far as in-game. And that doesn't mean fighting and physicality. That means winning the puck battles I'm talking about. We need to beef up our defense. We need to add those Nasons and Cotters, bigger bodies up mm-hmm. front, some skill to make our team just more competitive. And thus far, and obviously adding veteran goaltender, along with Jake Allen, who's a veteran guy, you know, mm-hmm. we had Markstrom. And it was up and down early with them, but they've been terrific so far. It's just because, for me, veteran goaltenders, nobody's perfect, and we've seen the way the goalie carousel's gone now, where the teams have carried their organization, which no names coming out of nowhere. But these two guys are veteran guys. When they go in a slump, in my opinion, they can get out of it quicker because everybody's going to go through a tough time. And the kind of that's what we've seen in the early going, and those guys have really been solid. But you had Dylan, you had Pesci. I mean, talk about old school. I mean, I just love watching Brett Pesci. I mean, he's
I like him too.
Good enough, but he is such a good defender. And and seeing that is just brightens my eyes and my heart. Now we got guys in the back end, kind of like my day, that go in crunch time. They can play top players. They use their stick extremely well. They box out. Dylan's been everything as advertised. He's big. He's strong. He plays the game a little nasty. He doesn't let guys get around their goaltender as much. I can't tell you how many backdoor goals I saw last year the Devils give up. It just doesn't happen as often.
Right.
So, Johnny Kovacevic, I am telling you, hasn't been good. He's been fantastic. Mm. And so now, and Siegenthaler, who had a tough year last year, I didn't know if he was going to be in the top six, has just had a revelation and playing great. So now you got four guys from a defensive standpoint that can move the puck, but can defend in their own zone.
That's huge.
That's where I think Fitzgerald really added some nice pieces. Are we perfect yet? Not by any means, but can we compete now? It's about, and everybody says, well, what about playoffs? And I go, I don't care about the playoffs right now. They got to get in. It's hard to make the playoffs. And you want to be a sustainable playoff team. That's what makes you a contender, because we know how tough it is in the playoffs. And you got to give yourself a shot a few years in a row. And they just haven't been a good enough team to do that. And I even go back a couple of years ago, I got Ryan and Victoria, where they were third in the National Hockey League. They came on the league with a storm, like they shocked everybody with their speed and transition game, and even won a round against their arch rivals. But you could see that that would might be a one-off from the standpoint they're not quite built yet to be a sustainable playoff team and a team that can compete in four grueling rounds. They had a great core. Those guys I mentioned, I love them and wouldn't trade them for anything. But now they're insulated a little bit with some beef. And that also gives them a little more room to maneuver and do what they do best. Jack Hughes probably had his best game last night against
Against Montreal. I can watch that guy forever.
Yeah.
He's an absolute magician out there. He's incredible.
But believe me, they feel a little more comfortable, because I'll be honest, where I say the game, the more it changes, the more it stays the same. Teams took liberties on them last year. I saw it subtly. They don't as much anymore. And even I'll even go as down far as in the lineup, in and out of line, Curtis McDermott, he means something. He means something. When the big fella's sitting on the bench, I watch the games. Things change a little bit
of
how they play the game, because you got the nuclear weapon sitting on the bench.
Right.
And he played pretty well, and he plays smart enough, moves well enough for his 6 to 8 minutes he's going to get. Great team guy. That's the why I say you need 28 guys a game. If you have a overall plan, one step at a time, to become a champion and to become even somewhat of a contender, we'll see where the rest of the season goes. But I give Fitzy and his staff and Dan McKinnon, who's assistant GM, who I love chatting hockey with, and these guys get it. You know, they get what we need in the offseason. He addressed it. You don't know if it's always going to work out. It's taken a little time to build chemistry. But they certainly look a much more well-equipped to be more of a dangerous team this season.
Ryan, let me pop in really quickly here. Thank you. You mentioned the cream of the crop in the East, Florida, and the Rangers, and then you mentioned a second tier, and you think that the Devils belong in that. Where do you have Carolina right now?
Yeah, well, there's the first tier again. And I only mentioned a few, but I said a handful. But the first tier, Carolina has been that team for the last 5 years, just haven't been able to get over that hump, showing how tough it is winning the playoffs. I thought they'd dip like everybody else did in the media in September, losing some of the pieces they lost in the back end and even up front. But it just goes to show you, when you have that culture, I give Rod Brindamore all the credit in the world. I battled against him. I know him pretty well. I love chatting with him when we were in Carolina to start the year, or shall I say a couple of weeks ago. He does that good of a job. He's one of the best coaches in the National Hockey League. So that's a team, and I played on teams like that, that interchangeable parts. Doesn't matter who's in the damn lineup. They just know how to win games because of their style, structure, and they just give you no room to breathe on the ice. And everybody's on the same page, and they work in unison. And that's what I noticed when the Devils went there earlier in the year, and Carolina again beat them, and that's going to be a stepping stone. I can't wait to see when we play them again, because they're just a tough team to play against and beat. And it doesn't matter, like I said, and not that they don't have a ton of talent. Nate just with his great start.
It's 21 points.
Yeah.
Jeez. They needed that. They needed a guy like him who's been kind of up and down at times and maybe goes invisible during the season once in a while. But if he becomes that consistent guy, because he's got all that skill, and you know, Seth Jarvis is, you know, taking a step as he continues to grow and get older and more experienced in the National Hockey League. But boy, like I said, Rod Brindamore's a hell of a good coach.
Yeah.
Because I thought, they're gonna be middle of the road this year, like all the media, and I'm sure in their room, just like during my playing days with my teams, when teams thought we might dip, you just know, you have a quiet confidence of what you believe in your system and your structure and just the way you play consistently every night. So yeah, they're a thorn in the side of a lot of teams in the Metro and the Eastern Conference, no question about it.
Since he started in 18-19 under his tenure, the Canes have a .668 winning percentage. Only Boston has more at .689. So to your point about Brindamore and what he's been doing has been phenomenal. I want to stay in the Metro because it's pretty much looking the way that many people thought. Carolina, New York, in New Jersey, but there's just that one team. Oh, right, Washington. What the heck are they doing, Ken?
Why? What are they doing right?
We're, again, all of us in the media. I do NHL Network as well. Yeah. I just have a passion for the game. Yeah, I wear my Devils colors on my heart. I get it. But I have respect for this league and all the teams and players, and just love watching it. And they're a great story. And last year, they were a great story. Mm-hmm. I was one of those guys, and they did it with smoke and mirrors last year.
Sure.
It's a bit of a house of cards. Yeah.
You just don't make the playoffs with a minus 18 or whatever they were, 20-something.
Nope.
You know, along those lines of goal differential, but they got great goaltending. They'd either lose 7-1 or win 3-2 all season.
That's right.
And they found their way in the playoffs, right? But what I see this year, General Manager Brian McClellan added a lot of good pieces. You know, they take on some reclamation projects. They beefed up their defense. They're pretty solid in goal with those two guys and adding Logan Thompson. Mm-hmm. What the Washington Capitals are to me is a little old school, and we've been talking about that a lot with my era and the way games transition. But they're a north-south team. They're big. They're heavy. They're opportunistic. And they got a lot of talented guys that are big. The Wilsons, and obviously the great eight, who's going to be the greatest goal scorer of all time. Eventually, Dylan Strome, you know, third overall pick a handful of years back. Was he going to become that third overall pick as far as his playing ability? Well, he's kind of doing that in Washington now, right? He's fit in. Dubois, I know, doesn't have a ton of points yet, but he's big. He's strong.
Yeah.
He's filling a void. They beefed up, like I said, their defense. And they're just a menace. I watch when they play. They're a tough team to play against. And that's why they're going to win a lot of close games as well. Because they're just big, strong. They win a lot of those puck battles. They block the center of the ice and get in the way. And they're in the lanes in their own zone. That they're a tough team to play against. Are they going to dip in a long 82-game schedule? I have no idea, but they certainly don't look like it, right? So
No. That's
what's making the Metro a better division than maybe a lot of people thought in the media. But I give Washington a lot of credit because not many people did prior to the season. But they play old school hockey with enough talent. But their talented guys are beasts. You know, McMichael's taking another step.
Yes, right.
We can go on down the list with some of their personnel. But they're a hard team to play against, no matter who you are or how talented you are.
It always seems like that's the perfect formula. That's what you want to be. You want to be. Yeah. You want to be a tough out, no matter what. Right?
Stanley Cup last year.
Yep. Yes.
It sounds like I'm kind of talking about Florida, but they've already taken that next step.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Florida plays a similar style.
We were talking to Sammy Silber, who covers the Capitals, a couple of weeks ago, and she was saying that the Pierre-Luc Dubois trade, bringing him into the fold, has been a big difference maker, even without the points.
Right.
Just having him compliment McMichael, having him compliment Tom Wilson on the other side. It's chemistry, man, more than anything else.
Yeah.
You can't all be the same player. It is chemistry. Let's one more team before we move on. Winnipeg. What can you say about Winnipeg? Come on.
Well, another team that everybody, I mean, we could throw them in the hat where everybody goes, what are the Winnipeg Jets? How good are they going to be?
Yeah.
Let's not forget, the Winnipeg Jets had 110 points last year.
Right. We do forget, though.
You know, we do.
It seems like we do forget.
Out the window going into the season. And let's not forget, I know it didn't go as well in the playoffs with Connor Hellebuyck, but they've got an all-world goaltender, the equalizer of all equalizers. When they're not playing well, he'll steal games for you. I know the playoffs was a little bit of a different story, but that goes hand in hand with, for whatever reason. And obviously they ran into a highly skilled, fast Colorado Avalanche who overwhelmed them a little bit in the playoffs last year. And they've already won a Stanley Cup recently as well. So it didn't work out in the playoffs, but that team is deep and talented. I mean, look at all four lines. They're getting scoring from everywhere, and they've got guys now that are, you know, we're starting to talk about the Velardis and start of that trade, not just Kyle Connor, who's been underrated his whole career.
Oh, 100%, 100%.
And Mark Scheifele looks like he's set to maybe have his best year of his career. Their defense is mobile. They play very well together. Josh Morrissey is an elite puck-moving defenseman, good two-way defenseman.
Mm-hmm.
But you can name a lot of guys there that they, and that's a team that believes in themselves. Did they think they'd have this kind of start? What is it, 13-1 or 14-1? Now, I've lost track.
13-1.
Pretty special start that gives you some leeway because they're going to go into a little rut eventually, like every team, even the good teams, that they've built up some equity, as we like to say. That team, I would say, as far as complete and deep, as a team as there is in the National Hockey League, and they've deserved all the accolades so far to start the season. We know it's a long year, but it'll be all about what they can do in the playoffs. And, yeah, with that start, they're in the playoffs. And I think in September, some people say, oh, they might be a bubble team, forgetting they did have 110 points last year, and it's a damn good hockey club.
Yeah. They're on pace for 126 as we do this.
Jeez.
And I remember yesterday before the game, if they went 500 – in the last 69 games. So you had to go 34 and a half. So I don't know how they do the half win, but I'm sure the engine can figure that out. They just have to go 500 to get to 93 points. So they can mail it in a lot and they'll still get 93 points.
They won't though. They won't mail it in.
No.
They're going to play. They're going to play hard. The best third line in hockey right now, the Adam Lowry line. That's the best third line in hockey.
Well, that's what they've got. Skilled guys with size. That's what I'm saying. That is such an, they've got speed. They're good in transition. They just can do a lot of things and beat you a lot of ways, no question.
Want to get one more in before we do the 77 seconds. We could go on for
I could do this all day.
Hey, guys, if you have 3 hours, I got more stories. I should write a book, by the way.
Oh, you should, Ken.
You should write a
thousands
book.
Thousands of them.
Yeah, you should.
And if you're willing, we will. We're not going to use up much more of your time right now. We would love to have you back
and save
a couple of stories, please.
My pleasure, of course.
Nashville made the bigger moves of many teams in the offseason. Stamkos, Marchessault, Yossi's now signed, and Saros, everybody. So what's happening there, Ken? You've been around the game a long time. Is this just a sense, or is this a team that's just not being able to come together because of the changes, or is there something deeper than this?
It kind of appears that way. I mean, it's been, we talk about the great stories in National Hockey League, the Jets and Capitals and teams like that. But Nashville, on the flip side, you guys have mentioned it. Chemistry, a lot of great pieces and veteran guys, and it just hasn't meshed for whatever reason. Saros has not been quite as good as – I always say there's five goaltenders, I could count on one hand, in the National Hockey League that are just consistently constant in the net that you know they're going to win you games. I guess he kind of hasn't been at that level that they need to be, but they haven't been as good in front of him as
right.
well.
Exactly.
Obviously, you had the talent of a Marchessault and a Stamkos who's starting to score a little bit.
He did last night, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think he got his fourth, but they're not, for whatever reason, finding ways to win hockey games. And that can that has a domino effect. It can really snowball when you have higher expectations
yeah.
with all the acquisitions. And for, you know, Barry Trotz, their general manager, I have a ton of respect for. We know how great of a coach he was. And now in the general manager's seat,
yeah.
he's capable because the guy is all hockey and had all that success. But to come out and say, if this doesn't change quickly, that's a real message to the team that
it is.
We're going to upset the apple cart and go a totally different direction quickly.
Yeah.
You know, and that was a bold statement. I respect that, believe it or not, because I think that's a combination of him trying to wake up his team and say, guys, we're not performing to expectations. We've got a way better team than that. There's a lot of season left. Let's yeah. not write them off just yet. But for whatever reasons, those parts, Ryan and Victoria, have not molded together, right? And, yeah. and they've still got a little time to figure it out, but they better hurry up. But for me, mostly it's, again, we go back to the defensive aspect. They mm-hmm. haven't quite been good enough around their goaltender, Saros, and he hasn't been able to steal them as many games as we're accustomed to
right.
seeing. In the early going anyway, he's eventually going to be the UC Saros I believe we're used to, but they've got overwhelmed a little bit here, so we'll see what the rest of the season has in store for the Nashville Predators. But there's yeah. a lot of good pieces. They got to figure it out.
Yep. When Trotz said that he had put together a fantasy team in the offseason that wasn't working, I was like, ooh, I love that stuff because it's entertaining, right? But
absolutely.
That's a burn.
He didn't mince words. And believe I kind of like that. I know some
people
to be saying that to players right away out of the gate and talking like, well, look, he's disappointed. As the rest of the organization should be.
Right.
It doesn't always go your way or every part you add in the offseason. I love when you say, well, this team won the offseason, that team won the offseason, including the Devils. I'm like, I have no idea how well they did in the offseason. I think they did pretty well. But right. is it going to work when they start playing together?
The only way you'll know. Yeah,
you know, that's what's happened with Nashville, I guess. Not in a good way right now.
I had them winning the Central, so...
Don't we love predictions because yeah. we're always wrong?
Oh, dear.
Shall we do the 77 seconds?
All right. So
all right,
this
Ken.
Is our – so we're not – I don't know how 77 seconds is going to go, but we're going to try. So seven
anybody
questions.
That,
we're gonna
anybody go. That knows me, that's hard for me, but I will try to
– Okay, we're going to – but we're going to quick fire this.
I'm trying to zip it sometimes.
All right.
It's hard.
Okay.
All right. I'll start.
Yeah, go ahead.
Most underrated Devil right now?
Oh, wow. Paul Cotter.
Good one.
Or Nason.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, good. If not New Jersey, who wins the cup?
Oh, wow. I usually like going out on a limb. Why not? Winnipeg Jets.
Okay.
That's easy. I'm jumping on the bandwagon.
Yeah, that's okay. Great.
I think a lot of people would say that team right now. Your toughest fighting opponent of all time.
Oh, gosh. I just saw him last night. Dave yep. Brown. Did it twice. I saw him last night. Wonderful guy. Did it twice when he was a Flyer and didn't want to do it too much more. But right. there was tons of them. Ty Domi, Joe Kosher.
Oh, yeah. The one building that you hated to play in the most.
I know this answer already, I think.
You do? Hated or?
Or just disliked going to the construction of it, whatever it is. Just the yeah. one building you didn't like to go in.
Oh, Victoria's thinking New York.
No, yeah, I'm thinking MSG. No?
I love playing in New York because okay. of the rivalry. Yeah. Washington back then and Landover.
Okay.
It was gloomy and always, I don't know, it was a darker arena and gloomy, whatever it may be. So I'll say Washington.
Was there any point in your
building.
Okay. Was there any point in your career ever you ever considered playing for another team?
Never. If they were going to keep me and have me, I was staying. I was all in. I was a Devil in my heart right from the start. No pun intended, but mm-hmm. no, I wanted to stay there.
If you could change one rule in the NHL, what would that be?
Wow, one rule. That's a good one. Now you got me stumped because I'm thinking of so many things.
Or an aspect of the game. Just something about the NHL.
Yeah, I love the place the game is in right now. I really am. I think, you know, it's the creativity, the speed is at an all-time high. Maybe the offside rule. I don't know, how close those are when it has nothing to do with the play. I don't know how you do it.
Corey. No, I know. Yeah.
When a guy's toes over the blue line, it's offside. Yeah. Nothing to do with the goal. So maybe something with the offside.
Last one. Between you and Ty Domi, who wins in an arm wrestle?
Oh, yeah. You're cute, Victoria. You probably read his book, right?
I heard you tell the story.
Oh, yeah. He put it in his book. And I couldn't stand that guy when he was a Ranger. And we're greatest of friends because you find out he's a great guy. And we used to do crazy stuff. And Ryan, if you didn't know, quickly, we had an arm wrestling contest at the China Club in New York. And we used to have a few Diet Pepsis in there. And it was crazier. No social media. And Messier kind of set this up. And I wanted to leave right away when I saw some Rangers walking in, kind of one of the places I used to like to go for fun. And he says, Kenny's a real strong guy, Ty. I want you to have an arm wrestle for fun and see who wins. We'd sit down at the table, two arm wrestles. Little did I know, Ty was a trained arm wrestler, not to mention strong as a bull. And
He's built different. Yeah.
Oh, he is.
Both arms. And I was crazy enough, and this is my crazy days, to headbutt him. Bounces got involved. It was nuts. And Mark broke it up and says, what are you doing, you idiot? You're supposed to be a... It just got back to the rivalry. Me and Ty laugh about it today. He's one strong SOB, but I lost. It was a $100 bet. I didn't do him that night. I walked right out of the China Club, angry, peeved, being such a competitor that I am. And we played him 10 days later, approximately. I handed the stick boy $100 in an envelope, and I paid him and said, give this to Ty Domi, that, you know, good son of a, you know what.
Good for you. What a story.
A handful of times as well. And I know this isn't 77 seconds. I'll never forget.
Oh, no. We're done. We're good. You go ahead.
He was a young player coming to the league. I was 10, 11 years in. He'd always knew I'd accept his challenge, and he was trying to get his feet wet as a tough guy and a fighter. You know, fight anybody and tough as nails, and most majors in history, and I have all the respect in the world for what he did throughout his career. Always a challenge, me, and I'd accept his challenge, and we had a handful of good bouts, and I didn't like fighting him too much because nobody had a harder head than Ty Domi. Oh. There were some good ones. So we line up against Toronto when he's a Leaf, and I'm a older Devil now, and we had a lot younger guys to do a lot more of that stuff. I'd only fight a handful of times a year, and I look, I go, I hope this guy doesn't ask me to fight again. He lined up to me and next to me and said, hey, Kenny, I just want to thank you for always accepting my challenge as a young player to get, you know, to get my feet wet. And I said, thank you. He goes, we're not fighting tonight. I go, thank God, Ty, because I was. you're still in the prime of your career and too tough right now.
Yeah.
That's a great story.
Great story. I love this stuff. And then how you become so close years after, because you just have the same mentality.
No, amazing. That's great. I particularly love how Mark Messier was the dad in the nightclub.
Breaking up boys.
That's not boys.
Go to your rooms.
Stronger than Ken Danico, because he saw how what I used to do in the weight room and travel together and things. But he set me up is what he did.
Absolutely.
He was so good at arm wrestling and how strong he was.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Ken, look, we have thoroughly enjoyed this, and we're going to do this again, too, because you can
really
tell so many more stories about your time in the NHL and just a bunch of stuff, but we ran out of time. So thank you again for your time, and can't wait to do this again.
Thank you very much, guys. Really enjoyed being on with you. A lot of fun. Just brings back so many memories. And if you need me to shorten it up at times, I can't ever give you a guarantee.
We don't need you to.
It brings goosebumps talking about old stories. I still love it.
This has been Pucks in 7, available on the SiriusXM app and wherever you get your podcasts.